Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Stephen the Warman Writes Kickfighting Podcast Show. I'm your host, Stephen the Warman. You are listening to this podcast in one of two ways. Either you are at my blog, which is lordtaul.podbean.com, or you are on iTunes, where you are entering or where you have entered Warman Kickfighting Show, and the show pops right up. I'm going to go ahead and jump right into the action. A lot of things happened in kickboxing this past couple weeks. I apologize. I was busy working the Glory event, so I wasn't able to get an episode up that week like I'd wanted to, but a lot of kickboxing went down. I'm here right now. I'm going to go ahead and get it to you. First and foremost, we have to talk about the big news, and again, it just kind of depends on who you are. That will determine to you how big this news is for you, but it is a big blow to the combat sports fight scene that the loss of Kid Yamamoto, it should be noted that he's a mixed martial artist, and normally I don't talk about mixed martial arts on my kickboxing podcast show, but Kid Yamamoto was a part of something very, very big in the history of kickboxing, and it should be noted. So I want to take a little bit of time and just give a little bit of attention to one of the great combat sports athletes that we've had, in particular coming from Japan. So the big moment that I want to talk about is Kid Yamamoto went against Masato at the K1 Premium 2004 Dynamite Show. And the reason why this was so big is because Kid at the time was considered probably the biggest mixed martial arts star in Japan. He is an athlete who had won. He probably is 125er, you know, like as far as his weight class. But he fought and won tournaments up, you know, 154, 70 kgs, 145. Didn't matter. This guy just fought. He was such a natural athlete, such a knack for wrestling, and he really did understand his power. He's got the fastest KO in MMA. I don't care who you are. But anyways, he brought that star power against Masato. And Masato was by far the biggest kickboxing star in the history of Japan. We have some that are emerging right now, but they didn't have the appeal, the crossover appeal that Masato had. Masato didn't just have the kickboxing skill, but he had the look, and he had a fight that was the opposite of his look. So his look was, you know, again, so many of the people who were watching the K1 Max, it was aimed, its commercials were aimed at a female audience because he was such a very, very talented guy, but he also was, he was a looker. The girls really, really liked Masato. But the thing that made this particular fight of interest, or this particular matchup of interest, or what made this one even a better battle, is Masato fights and gets in exchanges. Like, some of his biggest KOs are while he's being punched. He's really good at timing when he gets hit and hits you at the same time. It's something that I learned real early when I started learning combat sports. The best time to hit someone is when they're hitting. That's the best chance you can score the shot that they don't see is when they're comfortable throwing a shot. A lot of Masato's KOs came there. Kid Yamamoto, he was a guy who he could win exchanges like that, but it mainly was because he was such a crazy athlete. In the fight, he's going to lose a decision. Clearly, the better, more talented fighter, unchallenged, is Masato in kickboxing. But it should be noted, early in the fight, round one, Kid Yamamoto closed the distance, was able to land a big looping shot, and he scored a knockdown. When he scored that knockdown, that meant he had a 10-8. Next round, Masato got into his kickboxing game. He got the knockdown back. And then in the third, he was able to get another knockdown. The reason why this is significant to me is because it just shows the talent level of, you know, a guy who's just off the streets trying kickboxing, essentially. And he goes in there. He puts on a great performance in a loss. And it does 34 million views. Let me double check my notes. 31.6 rating in Japan, and he did 34 million viewers. That's 31 million people in Japan. Go look at a map and see how big Japan is. That is an amazing number. That is crossover appeal. So the two biggest crossover stars, one from MMA, one from kickboxing, met in the kickboxing bout, and Kid Yamamoto was part of that. Forever in history, he will have that place for that fight. That was very, very important. That kind of rating is a crazy, crazy number. So shout out to Kid. Of course, the other bouts he had just weren't in his favor at all. Mike Zambides, another moment in an opposite way, scored a chilling overhand KO of Kid Yamamoto, a guy who you knew he could lose a decision, but no one thought he could get stopped like that. and he landed. He took probably the hardest overhand shot from a guy who was probably the king of the overhand in his era, Mike Zambides, put him down, and he fought with all of his might to get back up to his feet despite the shot that he took. And I'm telling you, that crowd went dead quiet when he took that shot. Outside of that, they brought in a kickboxer that they thought he was going to be able to beat, Ji Huxian. And unfortunately, Ji Huxian landed exchange, landed a sweeping hook, scored a big-time KO, and that meant that Kid Yamamoto lost his last three kickboxing bouts. There was one that he had early in round one. In the first fight of his kickboxing career, they did bring in a guy he did have success under K-1 rules one time, but he lost the last three. With that said, despite those losses, more people watched him in defeat than some guys who had won four or five fights for K-1. And I still think that he's one of the major, that's one of the major kickboxing moments in his performance there. So, good stuff early in that career. Kid Yamamoto, of course, we know him because, you know, he had the very popular wife. He was married to the model Malia. I think they have two children together, if I remember correctly. I know they had one. Double checking now. They had two sons and a daughter. So all of his kids were with the same woman. They got divorced in 2009. He had been secretly battling cancer, and then they announced that he, you know, had a fight with cancer. And then shortly after the announcement, less than a month later, it felt, he had passed away. So definitely, my heart goes out to him and his family. Send him prayers that way. And I know not everybody listens to this show as a spiritual person. You guys know that I'm a very Christian person. I've said it on the show very, very many times. But I just have love for people, and I desire good for them. And when something like this happens, I wish I could walk with them. Definitely I hope things, I hope better days for him, for his family. And, thank you for what you did in combat sports, Kid Yamamoto. So we're going to go ahead and move back into the kickboxing option. Man, there are cards all over the place. I am going to go ahead and I'll start with this weekend, and then I'll work my way towards the Glory kick. You know what? I'll go ahead and do the Glory card. It's probably the furthest one out from this action. So I'll do the distant action and work myself up to the action that happened last night, because we really did have some good kickboxing in K1. They deliver another great show. Glory, of course, always doing consistent shows, entertaining shows. I'm going to go ahead and jump right into the action with kickboxing. Glory Kickboxing, I'm going to go from the top down. Alex Pereira gets a victory over Simon Marcus, 48-46 twice, 49-45 twice, and 50-44 for the, and still, middleweight champion. So right from the beginning, I thought Alex did a good job of establishing. He closed the distance. He looked for his power shots. He'll throw straight, then he'll throw wide. He believes in his step knee. Even if you throw offense at him, he closes the distance, and he looks to land the boxing. Simon Marcus, really, really good with the single kicks in space, and then he boxes into his clinch, even though Marcus has been doing kickboxing for a while. And he's probably got, I'd argue that Simon Marcus has more kickboxing glory bouts than anybody. I'm trying to think who has more than him. But he has done such a great job in his life and over his career of fighting kickboxers with a Muay Thai style. And he's still going to be strong in the clinch. So no matter what you think about his identity, no matter what you would think you would want Simon Marcus to play with, in the end, he's going to be the person that got him there. He's good, really strong with his single kicks in space, whether it's a switch kick to the body, a low kick. He's really, really strong with his kicks in space. That will always be something that he's good at. On top of that skill, on top of that ability, he will be able to go into the clinch and land some pretty significant knees in those spots. He's not going to be the kind of person that just waits from a distance, plays combination kicks and low, or combination low kick. He doesn't play that game. He doesn't play touch and go. He has savvy kickboxing in space, and he finds his moments. In fact, I would say his last fight with Wilnes was the most you will ever see him play touch and go. I thought that he landed clean shots with the body kicks, clean boxing, and then he'd go into the clinch or he'd step away. But he's not really a touch and go type guy. He more holds his ground, bites down on the mouthpiece, throws some power kick and goes into the clinch game. So I thought that Alex was probably scoring a little bit more in every round, a little bit more in space. Whereas because Marcus is such a tough, gritty fighter, he was able to shut off a lot of what Alex was trying to do in space. He would neutralize those distant combos by closing the distance and getting into the clinch game and wearing on the body. So then it just kind of goes to how you score those knees in the clinch. Simon also does something that it scares me to death as a coach, but he's so used to it because of Muay Thai that it just hasn't worked against him. There are times where he will drop his head and go straight at Alex. Like, he'll think to put his forehead in the middle of his chest because he knows when he gets there, he can get into his clinching and into his knee work in space. When I see it, I'm like, oh, man, you know, he's going to run into a big shot, or Alex is going to loop a shot and catch him. But Simon's so good at it, he's able to get his, you know, his forehead right into the middle of his chest and cut off the offense by tying up the arms and then really going to work with the knees in space. Alex, being so tall, was able to work back, but Marcus did a great job of keeping Alex from getting that offense going for a long period of time. As we got to round three, a little bit more work from Alex in space. Simon, again, closing the distance. He scored some kicks here and there, but he had been mostly clinched for the fight. I'd say the majority of his offense came from the clinch. Round four, after Marcus had a really good start to the round, Alex picked it up. He started to score, and as Simon was retreating, you know, just not necessarily bailing, but just stepping back to clear some space, Alex pursued with offense. He threw three shots from third shot, got Marcus. Marcus goes down, got up right away, but the 10 count was underway. He'll go on to lose that round 10-8, and then after the final frame, he really battled back. Like, Marcus fought in the fifth round as if he could be down or if the fight may not go his way. But in the end, the scorecards went in favor of your champion, Alex, and he will go on to defend the title. Good stuff there. Very, very entertaining fight from Benjamin Adekwuyi and Jafar Wilness. Man, is Wilness tough. So, first we get Wilness walking Benjamin Adekwuyi down and determined to score combo low kick, score counter low kick, score single low kick. Benjamin Adekwuyi at first didn't get into his kicking game as much as he played with his boxing and he played with his knees. He probably maybe did a little bit more in round one, but it was definitely close. Good boxing from both guys. Round two is the pivotal round. In that round, Benjamin Adekwuyi made a conscious effort to, all right, here comes the low kicks. Big combo low kick, big combo low kick. Wilness every once in a while would be able to counter kick back. He's got really good low kick endurance, so it's going to be tough to get Wilness stopped with a low kick. But he kept pressuring, and he kept closing the distance. He kept throwing shots when he got Benjamin backed up. But the moment he was, you know, stagnant or not throwing at all, they would call for Benjamin Adekwuyi to throw a combo with a kick, and he'd do a combo with a kick, and it would score clean almost every single time. And I think that he is working really hard to, Wilness is working really hard to get something going, period. And the strangest shot, and it didn't land the way people thought, a spinning back fist came, and Wilness more kind of got tied up with the glove and fell on the ground. And I think because of the way it spun and the slap that it made on the glove, that maybe confused the ref, but I did not see it from my view as a down. Now, I didn't have the view that the ref had, but it didn't look like a knockdown. Anyways, they call for a 10-8. Wilness gets up, goes back to work. He closes the distance, looking to, you know, get himself back into the fight. Benjamin Adekwuyi, the same shot that he had success with earlier in the year, that looping right hand that goes right at the temple, he was able to score that on Wilness. Wilness goes down for a legit 10-8 the second time. So Wilness goes down twice in the last 30 seconds of the second round, and Benjamin Adekwuyi's got a lot of space on the scorecards. We go to round three, and this is very, very important. I coach mixed martial arts. I've worked several fight events, worked in the UFC, I've watched, you know, tens of thousands of kickboxing bouts. In all of those fights, boxing, everything, when people are down and they need a stoppage to win, there seems to be a habit where people go out there and treat it as if it's a round to win and it doesn't matter. They don't go for the stoppage. Not the case here. Wilness went out there, closed the distance, threw to the best of his ability the kind of offense he thought it would take to get him. Now, he's not a hitter. Jafar Wilness is not a guy with KO power, but he can score the right shot by working you and breaking you down. So there are some people who got that punch, like Bader Hari got that. He's got that punch. Wilness wasn't born with those kind of gifts, but he is so tough, and he will walk you down, and he can land offense when he's close. Wilness can fight. And in the third round, Adekwuyi had a couple moments where he was able to score some low kicks and some punches, but for the most part, it was him on the retreat and Wilness on the hunt. Great job in the third round of battling back. Awesome fight. It was 29-26 on all cards because of the two knockdowns, and all the judges gave Wilness round number three. Good stuff by the heavyweights. A Amari Boyd gets a decision over Richard Abraham. You know, this really comes down to what you like. Richard Abraham showed me something that I hadn't really seen, you know, from him before. He had a really good body kick that kept throwing Amari Boyd off, like a good single right, you know, body kick or switch kick, and it would throw Amari Boyd off just for a moment. But most of the work as far as winning rounds came from Amari Boyd. Like, he kept pushing the pace. Wasn't always scoring, but he was always throwing. And he was throwing switch kicks, and he was walking him down, and he was throwing heat. He looked like his aggression in the fight was that of someone trying to steal the fight, like someone trying to take the victory. And Richard really did score well in his spots. And I'm telling you, that body kick, when it scored, it really did keep Boyd. It shut down everything Boyd was trying to do. But Boyd was so aggressive, and just he did things to win rounds, even if they weren't the cleanest or the most successful. The flow of his fight style was more advantageous towards winning a judge's opinion than what Richard was doing. Richard was doing more fighting second, or he'd throw back. Like, Richard always seemed like he was fighting back into the fight as opposed to taking the lead in the fight. When Richard has some of his better wins, it's usually because he takes the lead. But the fight was really, really close, and I can't stress you enough that when he did get his offense going, I really did think that, you know, Abraham was able to score clean and disrupt what Boyd was doing. But Boyd offered more if you're trying to give a winner out. So Amari Boyd gets a victory there. Andrei Benazarov gets a split decision victory over Bailey Sugden. Again, it comes down to what you like. Sugden was very, very slick. He was able to score and move, score and move. Anvar, you know, big guy for the weight class. I didn't think he was big until I saw him next to Sugden, because Sugden's not big for the weight class. Anvar was able to walk him down, and I use the term on this podcast all the time. Anvar landed the sexy shots. Spinning stuff, jumping knees, overhands, the stuff that the crowd oohs and ahs. The substance came from Bailey Sugden, you know what I'm saying? So it's like, Anvar gave the work, that's the girl you see at the club. Sugden gave the work, that's your wife. You know what I'm saying? Like, the person who's just doing the everyday, get in there, grind, I'm going to score here, I'm going to score here, I'm going to score combos, I'm going to score low kicks, I'm going to move around. Anvar, looking for heat, looking for heat. The thing that draws the crowd in. We go to the scorecards, 30-27, 27-30. So one judge, or two judges had it completely opposite for each athlete. And then we had 229-28 for Anvar with only one 29-28 for Sugden. So the split decision was as close as you can get. Again, this just comes down to what you prefer. And I really did think that Sugden, who's 21 years old, the sky's the limit. What he's going to be at 23 is going to be crazy. Anvar Benazarov, who fought a bajillion times over in Thailand and all over China and all over Europe, good win for him. He moves forward. Sugden, of course, we'll see more for him. He can fight. We'll go ahead and go focus on the tournament now. First things first, Mike Lemaire goes against Omar Moreno in a very entertaining fight, because Mike Lemaire, who comfortably, I remember when he sent me the message, he said, I think I'm going to go down to 170. I feel confident that I can make it. He made it clean. No problem at all. Smaller frame, dieted right, did the right work, came out. Mike Lemaire really, really good with double power side, straight right hand, left high kick, left body kick, straight right hand. Like, he does that good. He was able to score that in space. And Omar Moreno played kickboxing and movement the whole time. The strength difference showed up. Mike Lemaire had hurt Omar Moreno several times to the body, scoring a knockdown in the second round. But when Moreno got up, again, you saw it. There was passion for him to stay in the fight. Like, he didn't stay down in any situation. He really, really worked back with the low kicks. He attacked the rear leg because, you know, he came from... Or he attacked Lemaire's rear leg from his southpaw stance. And Omar, I've seen him fight both stances. But from a southpaw stance, he really went after the right leg of Mike Lemaire. And in the end of the third round, you could see the work show up. You could see him start to slow down. You could see the effect of all the offense that he had put into play. He really did a good job. But the difference was still the power and size of Mike Lemaire, who, despite the fact that I thought that he lost the third round, I thought Moreno really did a good job of slowing him with that low kick. I thought the double power sides that you saw from Mike Lemaire really got him up on the scorecards. So Mike Lemaire gets this victory and would have moved on in the finals, but the low kicks that he took when he went in the back, I think he thought he was okay, and as more and more time went by, the low kick damage built up, and he wasn't able to continue, but Lemaire would have been down to go on. Which brings us to the guy who won the tournament, and he won it thanks to being the last man standing. Troy Jones gets a victory over Casey Green. Head kick KO, 1 minute, and it's a spectacular finish as you're going to see. Troy Jones went out there with the aggression as if he were the better guy. Like, there is something that you see it. You guys have heard me on this podcast before. Sometimes I criticize Thais who are better when they go in an international scene. And they play the game, they'll get up some rounds, and then they'll just play touch and go and just try to go home. That might work when you're in Thailand, because in Thailand, you're looking out for the other fighter. And that fighter, both of you guys have got to take care of your family. So if you get yourself up after the fourth round, you got a lead going to the fifth, your coach is usually going to tell you to shut it down, or you'll just do it on your own, because you realize the other person that you're fighting, they're bringing home money to their family. So you don't want to injure them in the fifth round. When you go on the international scene, you really have to show the superiority of your kickboxing skill. And that's what you want to see when you have a Thai go against an international guy or a supreme European fighter against a local. You want to see something like that. It's very, very important to you that you see something like that. It's in the way that that's important, it's also very, very important for me to see if you are a better fighter from wherever, and you feel like it, you've got to show it in your skill set. You can't go out there trying to win a decision and go home. If you're better, you got to go after a guy. And I thought Troy Jones felt like he was better than Casey Green, and he went out there and he performed in such a way. He came and he dropped Casey Green with a jab early in the fight. It's just a power jab, like everything locked up right. He stepped with his, you know, lead leg. It locked up. His whole body tensed up when the jab scored. Green goes down the first time. Then Green got up and tried to battle back because, you know, if there's one thing Green has got some KO pop. And there have been fights where he's been losing. He's been able to score a knockdown. And in his last fight, Moreno, he was losing in the kickboxing bout, scored a knockdown against Moreno. Moreno was able to get up and battle back and score a couple knockdowns and get the fight back later in the round. But Casey Green, if there's one thing he had the KO pop. So he got up, tried to throw back, but Jones too strong, too ready, got into a flurry. Combo series, put the right head kick on the end, and it landed clean on the jaw. Big time KO over Casey Green. Jones moves forward. Again, last man standing as the Moreno had been injured his shin in the fight, and Mike Lemaire couldn't go because of the low kick work. So Troy Jones is your tournament winner after winning this fight. And Jones is very, very talented. I do believe that he's got the tools to be one of the kickboxing stars in glory and in America. I'm excited to see him down the road. Good stuff, Troy Jones. Casey Green, you know, just it's a tough game. I've seen it. As a coach, I've been on both sides of it. As an athlete, I've been on both sides of it. You know, you just want to keep your head high. You fought at the highest level, and you fought so many guys. So it's just not, sometimes this night happens to an athlete. Junior Taffa gets a victory over Hayes Wilson. This is one of my favorite performances by Taffa because Wilson really is good in those spots. Like, if you see him, Wilson's 26-3 in kickboxing. He closes the distance. He throws good shots to the body. He's got a good sneaky hook. He scored so many KOs fighting in Oklahoma. He got to his spots, and him and Junior were playing the game. And Junior was just so accurate today. Like, the shots he was throwing, he was able to loop his hooks really good. He hit a sneaky switch kick in there. He looked lighter. Now, again, I think he weighed 185 in New York, and I think for this, or 285 in New York and 280 flat for this one. But I felt like the guy I was looking at was a smaller guy, like fit-wise. And he went out there, and he performed well. He threw clean offense. He was able to score a right hook in the exchange. Wilson got up, and it looked like Wilson was ready to go. The referee had made the decision to stop it. I thought Wilson would have been fine to go personally, but, you know, I'm not in there. Sometimes the ref sees something that I don't, and I always have to, you know, lean towards them in those moments. But Taffa really showed me something. Man, he showed a lot of skill. Really good, sharp punches. He's getting better all the time, and we will see what happens with him moving forward, but Junior Taffa being on your Glory TV is always going to be good. Matt Baker and Thomas Jenkins put on a really entertaining fight, with Baker winning by stoppage in the third. Jenkins is a tough guy who's got clean kickboxing, and he always comboed back. You know, he definitely, Matt Baker, tall guy. Jenkins, tall guy. Baker, a little bit taller, was able to land good shots with his boxing, was able to find low kicks. Thomas Jenkins battled back. He comboed the low kick back. Baker would go. Jenkins would throw something back, a return kick, like he stayed in the game. The only problem was Jenkins was playing from behind just a little bit. Baker was able to score some big offense in the second round, scoring a knockdown with his boxing. And even though Jenkins went down from the shot, he worked himself back to his feet, went on the stool. Again, that's when you've got that tough decision. You know, when it's like, do I go back out there and so on when things aren't going your way? I talked to his coach, talked to himself. He went back out there for the third, and he gave it his best effort. Matt Baker was better on that night. Matt Baker was able to score a series of punches, gets a big, you know, KO with the boxing, and Matt Baker moves on. Baker, very talented guy. Again, has all the tools to be one of the better kickboxers in the country. He's already one of the better kickboxers in the country, the U.S. It's all about him grooming himself to go against guys at the international stage. Both him and Jenkins have the international experience because both of them, you know, did the IFMA game. So really, really good stuff. I'm excited to see the future of both. Go ahead and go to the undercard. Hassam Al-Kassri gets a victory over Cooley. Hassam, just, you know, he really won the fight. And I'd say, people say he's got a really good minute. Like about a minute and a half is kind of what the thing is on him, that he's just excellent. And then the rest of it is him just getting into a regular game. But there's a minute and a half in every fight where he's just super, super lethal. And I thought that he started off just trying to, you know, fill Cooley out, trying to find his flow. Then Kassri got into an exchange in the very end of it. Thanks to that karate background, he's able to sneak that sneaky high kick right over the glove, scored on Cooley. Cooley goes down, but he gets back up. And then Kassri, he's in that minute and a half. He came out guns blazing, threw a lot of step knees. Koo is a much better kickboxer than he showed on that night, but that's just the game, highest level. Normally, he's got really good kickboxing, the low kick flow. Normally, he has a really strong, a defense on his guard for boxing, and then he comes back with kickboxing flow. And the fight that he had before that, before this, to get himself into glory, he showed really good kickboxing, and he was able to clinch with a guy and score a big KO knee. But in this case, Kassri, the taller, longer guy, was able to keep him at a distance. And when Kassri wasn't scoring offense, and even if he's tired, he was just staying away from Koo, like just staying out of the range. And Koo wasn't able to close the distance with effective offense. And Kassri scored a knee in the second round. And I think both guys had gotten a little bit tired. But this knee, after the knee scored, he pulled Cooley down. And that's another one of those tougher things for a ref to call. Did he go down from the blow or did he go down from the pull? Cooley was slow to get up. The ref made a count. Looked at him, looked like he was ready to go. But again, the ref is seeing something that I'm not seeing, and he decided to call the fight there. Kassri gets his second victory in a row in glory. Just a talented guy, long guy, and he's young. You know, so ideally, we're hoping that, you know, he will continue to build his resume and be one of the stars for glory down the road. Justin Moss gets a victory over Paul Banasiak and probably the fight of the night. Paul Banasiak, gets into his distant kickboxing and his movement. Justin Moss, if you ever see him, he just kind of waits. He scores single kicks. He's not really a combo to low kick guy, but he can find big shots with his hands. So he'd be patient, patient, then he'll explode. And then patient, patient, then he'll explode. Here, Paul Banasiak, though he was getting hit, was landing a lot more offense than Moss. And he was able to score a clean shot that put Moss down as Moss was throwing a kick. They go to the standing eight. And I was like, okay, that's a good start for putting up Paul Banasiak, who was 0-2 in glory going into this. He did take a fight on 1 week notice the first time and 2 weeks notice the second time. But he goes into this one. He gets the fight, or he gets a knockdown. We go from that knockdown to the second round. And again, both guys are scoring good offense. Justin Moss just got into some good power series with his boxing. And I'd say that he probably won just a little bit more. But, man, close second round. Both guys throwing combos and kicks. Both guys staying in the pocket. Both guys, you know, really putting on a good show. Crowd was really into it. And the crowd at this time wasn't that big because we were on prelims. So really good job by these guys. Going to the third round, Paul Banasiak is throwing a switch kick to the body. Justin Moss calls, you know, times a punch off of it. He scores as he goes down, and now you have to ask yourself the question, Again, the hardest score to call is, did you go down? Is it knocked down off of a kick, legit or a slip? And in this case, it looked like it was, you know, could have been either way. Could have been called either way. Ref decided to go with the slip, so then we've got a close fight. There's a good chance that Moss won the second round. Now Moss is looking at a 10-8, thanks to what happened in the knockdown in the third. And I really thought, and it happened for the third time tonight, Paul Banasiak treated it like, I better go try to get this guy out of there. I have no idea what the scorecards are going to say. And he was very, very aggressive, threw a lot of offense. Really, really good stuff. Like, really good stuff for him. He's just a talented guy. Talented guy with a lot of grit and a lot of push. Banasiak scored a lot of clean boxing. Turns out he injured his hand, broke his hand in the first round. Just the game, you know. And Justin Moss gets the split decision victory, 28-27. 27-28 were the dissenting scores. So good stuff. Justin Moss will move on, and hopefully we see big time action like that from these kickboxers moving forward. Nick Chastain was successful in his second glory outing. He gets a victory over John Morehouse. Just really got into his game, got into his boxing, got into his low kicks. You can hear his corner yelling over and over, get into his low kick. Really, really good stuff by Nick Chastain. I thought he did a good job of playing a good, clean kickboxing movement game. Whereas John Morehouse, who looked much better than he did, he took a fight in 6 days' notice when he fought in the undercard in Glory, New York. But here, he had a camp, he was ready to go, and I just thought he did a great job of just combo, you know, like pushing and throwing boxing, and no matter what, he just kept going after Nick Chastain, even though Nick was up. Nick, you know, took some shots and just kind of, you know, called him on to kind of show that he was tough and he could take it, but, you know, you got to go give credit where credit's due. I really thought that Chastain was able to score clean boxing and not get into the battle of words that much. Clean boxing, clean low kicks. Nick Chastain is your winner. Last fight, and the first fight of the night, Lawant Nelson, LT, gets a victory over Trevor Ragin. Ragin is normally a guy who, even in his last fight when he was down, he got his power shots going. He let his hands go. He was able to close the distance. He's got a thick upper body, but he doesn't really cut a lot of weight. You know, he's already on weight really when the fight happens. Nelson's fought as big as 170. Him cutting down and fighting at 154, he showed some good kickboxing as usual, combos to low kicks, did a really good job with the low kick work, real good job with the movement. And again, like Cooley, Trevor Ragin has the potential to throw much better offense than he did, but sometimes it's just not your night. It's just not clicking the way you'd like. So Ragin will get another opportunity. He'll be out there again. He just has to get back to the drawing board, get back to his coaches, and get into his offense. But LT Nelson was definitely the clear winner, showed such good kickboxing skill. Again, not that old, 27, you know, he's a very talented guy. Hopefully we get a lot more of Nelson down the road. I'm going to go ahead and take us to the big K1 card as Glory Chicago wrapped up. Good stuff by Glory Chicago. K1 had great fights throughout. I'm going to go ahead and take us through the most important part of the segment. We're going to go through the tournament because that had some good stuff. Now, again, there were some awesome KOs in the undercard. If you want to know, if you guys want to check them out. The Rue KO over Furuta Tachi was the reserve 90kg fight. There was a solid KO there. I can't remember what round. I think it was the third round. And then Saki Hikishimoto gets a victory over Kajari Tsuji, and that was a decision. And then there was, I think it was a guru who had that big knee KO. There was a knee KO early in the fight. I can't remember the round, so please forgive. But I believe it was a guru get a big KO over Riata. I think that was the opener in the first fight, like 1 minute into the round. But anyways, let's go ahead and go into the tournament field. Iran's Sina Kermane gets a victory over Odi Ken, who was, you know, stopped in the fourth round. Close fight before, good back and forth action. Kermane showed me something because this is my first time seeing him on a big stage. Overall, this 90kg tournament was just all right. Like not a great field, but a solid field with some solid names of some guys who I thought would do pretty good moving forward. But I thought that was a good start to the card because we did get stoppages, and we love stoppages in kickboxing. So this, for the quarterfinals, Cena gets a victory there. And then KG gets a victory by knockout. I mean, good stuff over Brian McGrath, a fighter from, I want to say he's from Montana. Got into kickboxing after some MMA bouts didn't go his way, but KG just a little bit too much for him. And then we had Hitoshi Sugimoto, one of the people who people, you know, picked as one of the favorites. He gets a unanimous decision victory over Andre Gross. That was 30-29, 28, and 30-28 on that one. And then our last tournament fight against the guy who I thought would at least get himself to the finals, Bubakar El-Bukhari, gets a victory over Makota Ehara. Stopped him in the first round. I mean, Bukhari's, his boxing, his step knees, he's a very, very good fighter. I was surprised that he entered the tournament field in this spot. I thought they would match him up with someone different because Uhara's actually got some good history. He's got a victory in Glory. He's done well in Japan, but just sometimes it's the draw, and he went against one of the tougher guys first. Go ahead and go to some of the super fights. Rukakume gets a victory over Masanobu Gashi. Goshi is a talented guy, but he's not of the level of Sarek. Sarek's very talented. I've talked about him on the podcast before. He's got some losses, of course, because there are more elite guys than him. But, man, he can fight. Very, 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 very good fighter. He gets a decision here. Rikuya Ampo gets victory over Hayashi Kenta by knockout. Rikuya is a guy I talked about on this podcast many times. He's talented. He's not the Yoshiki Takai talented, but he's a talented fighter. Definitely keep an eye out for him, and he's going to fill your card with action every single time. And then we had Ryusai Ashizawa getting a victory over Kato Azawa by unanimous decision, 30-27 on all three cards. Ashizawa, just clear, dominant throughout, better kickboxing throughout. Again, he's a guy who I would put, there's an A class of fighters in K-1, and then I'd say there's B class. He'd probably be in that B minus area. Good, but not great. Good, but not great. We then move on back into the tournament. And that tournament field got some good options for us. Asina Karamane gets a victory by unanimous decision over KG. 30-27 twice, 30-28 once. Again, Karamane showing good kickboxing, kind of a weird style, was able to score shots in space. Again, it's his first big moment. Bubakar El-Bukhari gets a knockout victory. I really like this knockout over Tsushi Sugimoto. He had scored a kind of a looping right hook early in the fight, and he got into a flurry series, and he was able to stop it later on. Bukhari's got some sneaky offense, man. Like that guy, he's good, but he can loop the shots. I hope I'm remembering this correctly because it was late last night when I watched this card. This card took place over the Sunday night. For me, it started at like 12 in the morning and then finished at like, you know, 6 a.m. So it's just a weird time. So I don't have it all in my memory, but I got most of it. So Bubakar El-Bukhari moves on after the victory over Hitoshi Sugimoto. We then move on to Koji Setsuro Exakatis as he loses to Koji by split decision in the extra round. Close fight. Again, both guys kind of sit in that same area. Outside looking in, Koji's talented, and Storis they've used several times before, but I don't think either of those guys are the elite like the next two guys that I'm going to talk about. Yoshiki Takai with another stoppage, this time over Akram Hamedi. The guy's just got every skill, and he landed, I mean, he did a lead uppercut to overhand KO for the finish. And, I mean, just as clean a KO as you're probably going to see. There's a period of time where one of the shots he landed, I think someone said the joke that he looked like he knocked Hamadi's head out of the ring. He's just such a good talent. Just such a talented guy. He's got every skill. He's 21 years old. He's going to be one of the stars for the future. And that's what this game's always about. It's always about the next guy. And as soon as you think that, man, who's going to be the star for tomorrow, a guy like him steps up. A guy like, you know, Masaki Nori steps up. You know, it's always another athlete. As long as there are gyms, there's going to be another star. And Yoshiki Takai looks like he's got all the talent to be one of those athletes. Then we get into probably the most popular kickboxer in Japan right now. Worldwide, a lot of people consider him the best pound-for-pound kickboxer. As they call him, the war god. Takuro gets another big-time victory over Daniel Puertas, this time KO in the first round. It's not just that Takuro is getting all these victories. That's not it. It's not just that he does the really cool backflip off the ropes every time he wins. But the violence this guy brings to the fight, once he believes that he's got you hurt, hands down on the kill. You know what I'm saying? And it's not wild. We're not talking about a guy who's like winging from the hip. He just closes the distance and he throws 3-2s and 3-3s and like he throws those wide shots with such confidence once he closes the gap. He knows that someone's got to go and it ain't going to be him. So he always gets into those exchanges. He's been dropped before because of it. But then he gets back up and gets right back to killing. He's got one of the best memories that you could ever have in kickboxing. It's so important for people to have it. They don't understand. It's one thing to go out there and get victories by KO. It's another thing to go out there fully confident that you're going to win by KO despite what the other person does. And that's the Kiru. That's why they love him. That's why he's the big star. That's why he's in all the magazines and all the newspapers. The guy is legit. And he gets another victory here. Sin Karimain gets a victory. Majority decision victory over Abubakar Albakori. Close fight. I'm fine with the decision. 29-28, 28-28 even, and 29-28 again. As Sinan Karimain gets probably the biggest win for an Iranian fighter ever at kickboxing. We will see what they do with him, because the last time they did a big weight, kickboxing event, they got away from it. But if they're going to build this guy, a guy from Iran, kickboxing like that, they got to build him. They got to build. They got to use him some more. If they don't want to be a champion, they got to challenge him, But he went out there, gets a victory in this tournament. He would not have been my pick. If I did this podcast last week and said, who's my pick to win the tournament, would not have been him. Would not have been it. I would have picked Albakori. But good job by Cena. He gets the big win and he moves forward. Good stuff as usual from K1. The kickboxing wasn't the greatest. It's a little sloppy for the 90 kgs. And 90 kg isn't a sloppy division. Those guys usually punch pretty clean. But for this particular card, they were a little on the wide side and it didn't go as clean as I would like. But still, good stuff throughout. I'm now moving us over to Holland. That's right. I'm going to keep giving y'all kickboxing from all over the world. As we jump into and he's doing such a great job, the World Fight League with their 8th show. Of course, it is run by Melvin Manhoff. Well, I talked about Takuru before. Melvin Manhoff is my example. Melvin Manhoff could go out there, lose by KO, and then you could say, hey, Melvin, you want to go back out and fight? He'd go out there fully confident that whoever you had for him to fight next, he was going to beat by KO. He doesn't get discouraged in his preparation. He always thinks he's going to kill you. And that's how Takuru fights. He doesn't care if he gets it. He always thinks he's going to kill you. So one day, he's probably going to take a shot and he's probably going to go down. But that day ain't today, and I haven't seen any signs of that day. He just keeps going and keeps killing. Good stuff for him. As we go into this tournament, Melvin's, World Fight League number 8. I thought that, them putting on a heavyweight tournament of guys just shows what the next level of talent's going to be. Very important that we keep getting in. Now, this is a huge card. A huge card. I can run off some of the winners, but there's a lot of decisions. Cedric Menhoff got a victory over Lofogo Sorora on the undercard. That was TKO. Yunus Smalley, this guy I've mentioned this before. Yunus is very talented. He got a victory over Jordi Larratt. And then we had Geraldo Halskin gets a victory over Hamad Sanhaye. There are more undercard fights. There really are. But I'm going to go ahead and stop it there and go into the tournament field and the main card. Dexter Suisse gets a decision over Martin Terpstra. I wasn't able to see that fight, so I can't break it down accurately. Murat Aygun, who would be my favorite going into this, him or Fabio Quasi. And unfortunately, the two guys who I had going the farthest met right away. And Aygun is a guy who's fought and had success for them before. Quasi has victories all over the world, but Aygun was the better kickboxer in this one. Sam Tevet gets a victory over Clyde Brunswick, two other guys who are regulars on this promotion. And Andre Stoica sighting, shout out to Romania, gets a victory over Levi Kukin. Stoica's always been a really good kickboxer. He's a very talented guy, It's just the consistency, and because they were fed so many guys when they fought in Romania, once they went on the international scene and they didn't have the scorecards behind them, they didn't have the matchmaking behind them, he had mixed results. And it's too bad because he's really, really good. They didn't stay consistent. But shout out to him. He gets a victory and moves forward. We go into the next round, and I believe This is one of the reserves, because I didn't see him in the first fight, and I was not able to get a hold of this fight. But for the, yep, I'm sorry. This is one of the main fights. I'm sorry I missed a couple up. I fixed what I mixed up. I mentioned Dexter Suis versus Martin Testra. That was a reserve fight. Nordin Mahedin versus Fred Sicking. Another guy I thought was going to be going a little bit further, but he lost to Mahedin. That was the last of the heavyweight tournament finals. Nordin getting that victory. We move to the next round. Murat Aygun gets a victory over Sam Tevet. Again, heavyweight fighting. You want to see more stoppages? Didn't get that this case. We had a decision in every single heavyweight bout. Not necessarily the best for TV. Not necessarily the best because of the history of the heavyweight division. But as far as skill goes, today's kickboxer at heavyweight shows more skill than the guys that you saw in the old days. Not that those guys weren't skilled, but there were some people who just went out there as hitters, and they were able to get pretty far. This generation of fighter doesn't have as many hitters, but a lot more skilled guys. Nordin Mahedin gets a victory over Andrei Stoica with skill. You know, Murat Aygun gets a victory over Sam Tevet with skill. And it should be noted that Andrei Stoica, he's not a heavyweight. He just kind of grew into it, and as the opportunities went away when he fought at 85 kgs, he found himself a bigger guy. And he moves on, goes against Mahedin, who is a natural heavyweight, was able to get the victory there. Jarena Barnes was not able to find an opponent or someone to defend her title with in Bellator. Kickboxing, plus Bellator Kickboxing, only does like two shows a year. We're hoping to get a little bit more from them, 2-3 shows. Hopefully they can get it to 6 if they're going to be out there. But she was allowed to fight in this card. Originally, she was supposed to be, you know, fighting, one of the better fighters in the world than Anissa Hidalgo. But I think contract-wise or injury, something happened. And instead, they bring in Amil Debi. And Amil Debi's interesting because she fights at a much lower weight class. And she made her resume bigger than the Glory weight class. But she fought for the Glory title earlier this year. So she goes out there, goes into Jarena Barnes, bigger, stronger, better. Jarena got into her combo flow. She was able to throw it looked like a knee to high kick kind of variation. She catches Amil Debi clean with her shin out cold. Jarena Barnes is your winner. She's probably pound for pound the best female fighter in the world right now, thanks to her consistency. Now, of course, you guys know how I feel about the decision and that I'm, and how a lot of people feel about the decision, I should say, as far as the next Mexican goes. But she's a talented fighter, and she is right at the top still, right at the top. But Jarena Barnes is also in that conversation. Jarena has not lost. The only loss that she had was overturned when they revisited the scorecards later. But she's very talented, and she's got, stoppage power, and she's been getting them in their last few fights. So good stuff for Jarena Barnes as she moves forward. Murat Aygun then gets a victory over Nordin Mahedin in the heavyweight tournament final. Again, a clean kickboxer, plays with combos and low kicks here and there. He's got savvy movement. He throws his power shots at the right time. Just a talented guy. He gets the tournament after a long night of heavyweight fighting. The fight card wraps up with Maximo Suarez getting a victory over our man, Javi Hanesian. Man, Maximo Suarez sighting. I thought Maximo Suarez was going to be the best, one of the top five welterweight, first of all, top five lightweight kickboxers in the world. He was so, so talented. Like this guy, combos and kicks, jumping knees, like just brought it. He could fight all round. But man, does he get fat in the offseason. He just lets his body get bigger. And so when he got into Glory, he's one of the better fighters, but he's fighting at 77 kgs. He's not a 170-pound fighter, but because of his work ethic and because of his eating, I remember Omar Moreno said that he gets up to as big as, 90, 93 kgs. For a guy that's a big guy, for a guy who always has something sitting on the stomach. But man, is he a talented kickboxer. So when this came about and I saw that he got the victory, I was just excited for him because he's such a talented guy, and there's no way he should be losing at a high level or consistently at a high level. His talent suggests that shouldn't be the case. He's really, really good. But for whatever reason, thanks to, the weight cut or just his off-season eating, he's kept himself out of being in the fight shape it needs to stay at the top all the time. He really is a talent. I'm glad he got this victory, and I want to see more from him. Because he's very, very good. And as far as the promotion in general, they've just done a great job of being consistent. And it's crazy that that's what we're talking about right now. We're talking about an organization that, you know, you can make the argument maybe they should be third or fourth, you know what I'm saying? Like, they shouldn't be, you know, anywhere in the conversation. Bellator should be higher than them, but they're not. Not that Bellator is not paying good money. Not that Bellator is not doing good stuff out there. And this is not a shot at Bellator. That's not what I'm doing right now. What I'm trying to say is it blows me away that they are so consistently putting out shows and they're so regular on TV and they're doing it with, you know, a budget and everything based mainly out of Holland, where some kickboxing organizations with a little bit more resources, they're not doing as many shows as them. So shout out to them. Good stuff there. A wrap of the show with a couple of notes. Ratang Jitmungnan gets a victory over Sergio Wilson. Wilson is tough, and he gets up, and he fights everybody. But, man, Ratang is just too much. Just too much, too skilled. And Wilson, they've brought him in like three times in a row against some of the most elite full-rules Muay Thai fighters in the world. He's getting a good paycheck, but, man, he's just having some tough outings. The other Muay Thai fight they had on this card was Fabrice Fairtex Delanen. It gets a victory over Yeopin Rung Jitmungnan by split decision. A little bit closer fight there, but I am bringing this up to show you guys the full range of kickboxing and Muay Thai that's going on out in the world. But as far as skill goes, you know, and as far as, like, you know, just a full card of good kickboxing action, aesthetically for me, I prefer that they have the gloves. I prefer that we have kickboxing gloves. They have MMA gloves, and I don't have a problem with it, you know, for people who do those organizations. But the reason why I prefer kickboxing gloves and kickboxing fights to MMA gloves, as you're starting to see a couple people play around with now, is the reason why the MMA glove is built that way is because it serves a function. They need to grab an MMA. That's why they have that smaller glove. Like, that's why the glove looks like that. So they can grab. You can't grab with a boxing glove. You could grab with a boxing glove. I think that the MMA glove would look like a boxing glove. It looks that way because of the function of the sport. The reason why you have a cage is because some of the action must continue. As far as takedowns and work on the cage and just the flow of it continues despite it. That's why you have that instead of ropes. People can slide through the ropes. You have to have a team of guys to push you back in. So those are functions in MMA. So when I see that people are doing it in kickboxing just because they think the smaller glove means more violent, I guess my problem with it is it's violent enough. The product's already great, and you guys have already put on great kickboxing shows with people with kickboxing gloves. I don't see the reason for it if it doesn't show a function, if it doesn't serve a function. But that's just my personal opinion. Other than that, really good show, really good kickboxing, you know, action throughout. I just thought these last few weeks have really put on some great kickboxing performances, and there have been some great athletes to really just show the high level skill there is. I am going to go ahead and upload this one. I was thinking about adding a preview for the Glory card to come. I'm going to go ahead and let that card work as it is. I will note that I mentioned Anissa Hidalgo. She was in a tournament recently. I'll wrap up. I was going to go ahead. I'll add one more. I'm going to go ahead and add this Kunlun fight event. I was going to go ahead and close the show. I'll go ahead and talk about Kunlun. Wang Kong gets a victory over Zhu Mengji by unanimous decision to win the Mulan tournament. The Mulan tournament had a pretty good female core. I'll go ahead and say some of the names. Anissa Du gets a victory over Sheila Zhang. That was unanimous decision. Zhu Mengji gets a victory over Vinikova Svetlana, and that was the tournament. That's another decision victory. Block Neely, interesting name there, got a KO in the first round over Li Mengrui. And then Wong Kong gets a unanimous decision victory over Nang Kenham. I wasn't able to see all those fights. I saw a little bit of Anissa Do's fight, and of course I saw Wong Kong's performance because that one popped up online. But good stuff there by those ladies. We have a couple of other notables. I don't want to just keep running off Chinese names that you guys don't know. But I'll go ahead and finish with the tournament. Zheng Meiji gets a unanimous decision over extra round. Split decision over Anissa Hidao. That has been her struggle when she's lost. It's been because the fight's close and they've leaned towards the Chinese girl's work. It's happened to her a couple times now, which is a shame because she's really, really talented. And she's got big-time victories. Wong Kong gets a victory over Block Nee Lee. And as I mentioned at the top, Wang Kong gets the tournament victory to win the Mulan tournament. So go ahead and expect Wang Kong to be in your top 10. I no longer make a top female kickboxing list anymore. I used to do it for Glory Kickboxing. I used to do it for Liver Kick, and I had Glory Kickboxing fighters in it, but I started to realize, you know, I probably should separate myself a little bit more just in case. And just call the action as I do one and leave rankings out of it, despite my personal feeling for having one. But that's pretty much this card. The only thing I wanted to take away is Superbomb was injured and was not able to have his tournament, the major tournament that Kunlun's been doing all year. They have instead pushed his fight back, and he was able to make it up here, where he gets a victory over Nayanesh Ayaman. Again, Superbomb, too good, too clean, too good kickboxing, too good Muay Thai, too good everything. He gets the big victory. I want to thank everybody for listening to the podcast. I will be back right after the Glory Show with another episode next week. Get myself back on a regular basis. Sorry for the 2-week separation again. Sometimes I get busy with work and between Glory and then my fighter won in the UFC in Dallas earlier this month. Sometimes I just don't get the opportunities like I like. So thank you. I'm back, and I will keep pushing you with that kickboxing product. God bless and good luck. Peace.